The following podcast is intended for listeners over the age of 18. It contains mature subjects and adult discussion. Listener discretion is advised. As we are not doctors or psychologists, all advice is for novelty purposes only. All advice and discussion comes from our own personal experiences. Yours may well be different.
Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There's always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore open relationships and swinging. The pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of swinging in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hand down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus a free extra gift so sensual I can't even mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type swing set for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code SWINGSET at adamandeve.com.
Skydiving, whitewater rafting, rock climbing, bungee jumping. Part of the thrill is the danger, the inherent risk. And if you indulge in any of these activities, you have crossed the threshold of acceptable risk. Swinging in non-monogamy also carries with it risk. Any news agency loves to report on how dramatically your risk of catching a sexually transmitted infection increases with every new partner, but most of these stories seem like little more than sensationalized attempts to discourage teenagers and college students from fucking around. The most recent example of this heightened risk assessment is the news stories about oral sex causing cancer. How's that for a scare tactic? Tonight we're joined by Gay Rick from Sex is Fun, an HIV educator, to help us explore the real risks associated with non-monogamy and swinging, but also cut through some of the bullshit to find our own levels of acceptable risk. And just as an aside, I've made my co-hosts a promise tonight to not refer to children as a sexually transmitted infection, and to reinforce that if you want to grow a life form in your body, or the body of someone close to you, it's fine with me. Life on the Swing Set is firmly in the camp of allowing breeders to breed.
Well, thank you.
So I'm Cooper Beckett, and with me tonight...
Hey, it's Dylan.
This is Shira B. Katz.
And I'm Gay Rick.
So welcome, Rick. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It was an honor to be invited to join you guys for this discussion.
And I know you played the caveat before we got started here that you are an HIV educator, so, you know... These are to be thought of as guidelines, your thoughts about the other STIs? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, absolutely. I think HIV is kind of what... It was one of those things that I really had interest in because it affected the community that I'm a part of pretty severely. But I, as a result of kind of being in this field, I've had to really be knowledgeable about other sexually transmitted infections. So, you know, that's why I was comfortable talking to you guys about these things, but I'm more comfortable calling myself an HIV educator than anything.
Wonderful. And you are joining us from the surface of the moon, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm actually at a gay dinner party right now. I was invited last second, and I was like, well, if you guys don't care if I disappear for a little bit to do an interview with the fantastic people from Life on the Swing Set, we'll come to that party. So I'm sitting in a bedroom with a glass of wine and talking with you guys.
Wonderful.
Very professional way of addressing sexually transmitted infections and HIV, right?
Excellent. No.
Well, make sure to tip the servers for me, right in the G-string. If you don't mind.
And what makes a gay dinner party different than a...
say, heterosexual dinner party?
They're making coq au vin, and they have lots of wine.
I don't know. We do both of those things, I think.
Mm. Okay. It's exclusively gay men.
Oh, that would
yes. Just a quick functional question there. At a gay dinner party, do you also include bi men in that?
Well, I would be happy to include bi men at any given point, but I think it was just people that knew each other and they wanted to have dinner.
You guys be nice to poor Rick. You're treating him like an alien. Come on now.
I'm used to it for my co-hosts on my show. So.
It's the first actually fully gay person on our show. We've come close with bisexual people, but he's the first gay man on our show.
You have pansexual people. Doesn't that count for anything?
We have pansexual too. Yes. Inclusion. Yes, I'm with you.
I know,
inclusion.
I'm so the San Francisco portion of this show. I apologize.
If it makes me any less gay, I do love making out with women. I love it.
Well, I don't know that makes you less gay, but it's certainly cool.
Okay. Yeah, there we go.
It is appreciated as well, I'm sure, for all us fag hags out there who have those hopes and dreams. Yeah.
I think you officially just got Shira B. Katz a little bit more excited about the show.
Yay!
So, Rick, as I said in the intro here, I'm seeing... as I get more into the sex positive community, I'm seeing a lot of the information about STIs and STDs being informed very heavily by sex negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is there any way around that? Can we figure this out so we don't have to be terrified that open sexuality means, well, you're probably going to die of some horrible STD before you know. Make it out of here.
Yeah. Well, and this is maybe my like social worky, nerdy counselor side that comes out, is I think there's some validity to the fear around sexually transmitted infections and HIV. You know, until like the 19th century, a lot of people were dying from syphilis. And, you know, and then all throughout the 80s and 90s, a lot of people died from HIV. So, there's a lot of people that are still alive that were impacted kind of by the HIV kind of epidemic when it was really just starting. And that just kind of drove home a lot of, I think, fears around other sexually transmitted infections. You know, we kind of go through these ebbs and flows of sexuality and liberty kind of around it. And a lot of it, you know, sometimes in history, we appreciate kind of like the freedom of that. And other times we're driven more by the fear of becoming affected by certain things. So it's kind of like this back and forth and ebb and flow that happens just based on what's happening in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's some legitimacy to the fear, and I think that certainly is something to take into consideration as you're evaluating the risks of certain behaviors that you may be engaging in. That being said, you know, I think that there is a lot of negativity associated with STIs. And I think that's really attached to sexuality because people want to look at people who, and I've talked to so many people, you know, in the work that I do, that when they've been diagnosed with HIV or when they've been diagnosed with genital warts or herpes or something like that, they feel like a slut. They feel like a whore. And it's really, really sad to me because I think, you know, if your coworker were to show up at your place of business with the flu and you got the flu, you wouldn't think of yourself as a whore or a slut. It's just that it's based on the fact that you've had sex with someone and that's what actually ended up being kind of the impetus for this particular infection.
Right.
So it's sad to me how negative it is for people to become or to get infected with something. But I think that some of the infections, if they're not treated or monitored, they can become serious. So it's kind of this crazy duality and how do you balance that out, you know, with being sex positive.
Right. Well, what concerns me a lot is, you know, you look at the herpes and the HPV statistics specifically, and how they're dramatically inflated by the non-STD portions of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving us this idea that there's this horrendous monster out there that we're almost sure to catch if we're at all promiscuous.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, even if we have sex with one person.
Yeah, exactly.
Like with HPV specifically, so many people out there that are sexually active have HPV. Like it's a crazy high percentage. I've heard anything from like 60 to 80% of sexually active adults have HPV. So like grossly inflate that, like you said, it seems kind of unfair, you know?
I think that's one of those statistics that's thrown out there to scare people, but isn't exactly an entire statistic. For example, I'm pretty sure the statistic is that 60 to 80% of people have had HPV, not they have it. One of the things that I always find fascinating that no one seems to really understand or know about because the information isn't out there as common is that the Center for Disease Control, which is run by the government, they have this quote on their site that I really like. It says, "Most of the time, HPV causes no symptoms or health problems and goes away by itself within 2 years. Experts do not know why HPV goes away in so many, but not all." And that's the sort of thing that that makes me think like those statistics might be blown out of proportion a little bit.
Well, it's easy to blow statistics out of proportion when you're talking about STDs, STIs. I know that a lot of people have this perception of the ease of transmission of anything. I mean, my education about AIDS started with, you know, me being afraid to jump in a pool with anybody that might possibly have AIDS because, oh, you'd all catch AIDS. Oh, God. And, you know, It's not like that attitude went away right when I heard, you know, that's not possible. It's like that stuck with me. And that was my first experience with any of that. So, you know, anytime anybody hears any possibly rational or possibly irrational statistic about it, they're going to assume that it's going to be the worst possible thing and they're going to have to stay away. And so it's like, okay, if you can't even jump in a pool with somebody that has AIDS, can you be around someone like that? Can you even talk to someone or kiss someone or eat the food that they eat or, you know, anything like that? And so when you get down to something more simple, less dangerous, like, you know, herpes or anything else that's transmittable, and you start talking about sexuality, I mean, you're already at the point where you don't want to even be near them. So how do you even start the conversation about what's rational with STDs and sexuality? It's just a tough place to start from. You have to reverse educate people after, you know, 10, 20 years of this kind of stuff.
Exactly. Well, I think with any sort of infection, regardless of whether it's sexually transmitted or not, everyone always wants to know what does this mean for me and my health? And what is the worst case scenario that could occur as a result of being, you know, having this medical condition? You know, and I think like a lot of the people that I talk to who are diagnosed with HIV, they all want to know how long do I have to live? And I'm like, I can't answer that. You know, there's so many things that impact that, you know, it would be irresponsible for me to give you a time frame of how long you're going to live.
Right.
And I fall back, you know, I want to actually go back to that HPV thing. Is like a lot of people don't know necessarily that they'll clear HPV on their own, you know? A lot of people don't know that a lot of strains don't cause any sort of, you know, anything noticeable to the body, you know? Like not all strains of HPV call genital warts. In fact, I think there's only like two or three of them that actually do. And there's a number of strains of HPV. So it's really just one of those things that whatever STI or whatever infection that you end up with, the point that the CDC is getting across is that a lot of people have this.
Mm.
And you just need to monitor it. And that's why women, you know, when they go in and they get their PAP and and I've had so many friends who have been diagnosed with HPV, they freak out. They're like, oh my God, I'm going to have cervical cancer. I'm going to die.
Right.
I'm never going to be able to have sex again. And that's not the case. It's just that you need to monitor this just to make sure that your body's going to clear this on its own. And that's what I want to get across to people, is that it's normal. It's really, really normal for people to become infected with these things. Planned Parenthood had this great little fact on their website, which says, did you know that more than half of all Americans get a sexually transmitted disease or infection at some time in their life? Half. Yeah. That's a lot of people that get one of these infections, and they go on living, and they end up, you know, living healthy lives and have healthy sex lives after they become infected with these things. Some people get something like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and they just have to take some antibiotics and clear that. You know, some people get syphilis, and hopefully they discover it early enough on that it doesn't get, you know, it's not impacting their central nervous system. But at the same time, some people get infected with other things like herpes, where that may stick around for longer. Right. And you may have some more symptoms. It may be hepatitis B. Or hepatitis C even, and you need to be monitoring that, because that can evolve into some more serious things. It may be HIV, and you really need to monitor that. So it's just, the point is, I think, not that you need to think that your sex life is over, but that you just need to monitor this, just like any other health condition, just like if you were to have diabetes. It's just like if you were to have any sort of other kind of chronic long-term illness, if it's not something that can be eliminated with sexually transmitted, or with antibiotics, or something that will go away with time.
I have a friend who's a doctor, and she is unfortunately on the receiving end of a lot of nervous phone calls from me, because I'm not only a neurotic, but I'm also a hypochondriac.
Okay.
And everything looks like herpes to me.
It's amazing, isn't it? How scary it can
be. And how every single symptom of anything in the world, if you look online, it's a herpes symptom.
It's just, you know, a pimple. And when I was doing some other work kind of within the HIV field, I would actually get a lot of calls from people kind of asking about HIV. And it was like, if you put any set of symptoms into WebMD, chances are you have HIV, cancer, and you're having an epileptic seizure at that exact time.
My wife actually removed the WebMD app from my iPad.
Nice.
Because within 10 minutes of downloading it, I already had something. So, yeah. And she told me, though, that because of my hyper awareness of it, mm-hmm. I'm actually, it's a better thing, and more people should be as hyper aware and be paying attention to every little discoloration or bump or anything on their cock and talk about it, mm-hmm. and figure out what that is and be concerned, as opposed to the people who don't pay really any attention to it.
Well, I'm going to challenge that. I'm going to say, I don't know if you need to be hyper aware, but I think you need to be aware.
So you're saying my hypochondria is not going to save me here?
It may not. I think that a lot of fear around STIs and HIV is kind of unnecessary. I think there's certain behaviors that are going to put someone at risk for certain things. And I think oftentimes people like to jump to the craziest conclusion. Mm-hmm. And what I think a lot of people don't understand is that stress impacts the immune system. So when you're freaking out about the fact that you may have a sexually transmitted infection, and you're reading about it, and you're staying up late, and you're not getting enough sleep because you're online looking at WebMD and different symptoms of this, that, and the other thing, and you're going to the CDC and you're checking out this, that, and the other thing.
Have you been following my internet this week?
You know, I have not. But not when you're stressed out, your body's impacted by that, and you're actually going to have physical symptoms from that stress. You're actually literally worrying yourself sick.
Well, you know, the stress doesn't help with, you know, how you feel about yourself and then how you feel about other people. I mean, if you want to continue being sexually active with people, constantly worrying whether you have something isn't going to help. You know, that doesn't mean you can't be vigilant about it. But, you know, one of the first things that scared me about sex was the thought of pregnancy. And for me, you know, a condom and, you know, birth control, and it wasn't enough for me. You know, I still had problems with it, but as I got more comfortable with it by reading about it and figuring out what the actual statistics were, you know, educating myself, I felt better about it. And so, you know, obviously when I started swinging, the next logical step in my own personal stress levels was, oh God, am I going to catch something? Oh, I'm licking something. Oh, wait, but I'm wearing a condom. Oh, where is all this coming from? And, you know, we've talked in the past about how we, you know, about our risk assessments, and how we can resolve the whole, well, we have to wear a condom all the time, but we don't use dental dams thing. So, you know, once I became comfortable with how, you know, I dealt with that and how safe it is and, you know, how I have to take a little bit of risk anyway and how I take a risk anytime I kiss anybody. And it's like, you know what? You just, as long as you have looked into it, you start get comfortable with it. And vigilance doesn't mean stress. It's just, but the stress itself, you know, prevents lots of fun things from happening sometimes. And it's just not worth it.
It's amazing how the penis will not agree. Or actually even sometimes the vagina and the clitoris won't agree when our bodies are stressed out, especially about those sorts of things. So I think that's, you bring up a really valid point. Definitely.
One of the things that I think about is maybe it's not just like a sex negative thing in our culture. If we look back to whatever the hell happened with H1N1, like, what was that mess all about? People got very, very excited about this very simple thing. It was the flu. People were getting the flu and everyone was kind of losing their mind over it. It's like a nationwide hypochondria.
It's we have a nation full of people who watched movies like The Stand.
And
are hoping they get to be part of the small survivor group. And it's the same people who are preparing for their very own zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
They want to be the survivors.
Have you read the book, actually?
For that.
Which was The Stand?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Such a good book.
It's amazing.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, we can geek out.
With you, Rick.
So I think that's we look obsessively at any possible disaster with the question of, am I going to be one of those lucky people who get to survive the disaster and pick up a car anywhere, you know, and raid the liquor store and all that?
Yeah.
I really think there's some of that to it.
Well, I mean, that very well could be part of it. And like, it's funny how HIV has kind of brought up that idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have heard, but there are certain kind of really kind of small populations in the world that have shown some resistance to becoming infected. I think there was a study that kind of showed some sex workers in Southern Africa who had been exposed to HIV a number of times and never became infected. And it was theorized that it was because their immune systems were really hyperactive and they were really just knocking out any sort of infection that they were presented with. And then some gay men in San Francisco as well. There was some resistance shown as well, there was some theorized resistance shown around HIV as well. So, like, I think there's some kind of legitimacy and there's some kind of research backing this, like, I want to be part of this elite group. But, you know, are you willing to take the risk to find out if you're part of that elite group is another question.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, there was that a story back in December, I think, of last year, of somebody who was actually fairly verifiably cured of AIDS through a bone marrow transplant from somebody that was, okay, so you heard about that too. Yeah,
I absolutely did.
I thought it was interesting, and that they were actually, I thought it was very interesting that after all the panic making about AIDS over the years, that the moment that one person gets cured through an extremely expensive operation, you know, bone marrow transplant, they all of a sudden start saying, you know, hey, there might be a cure here. Oh, hey, you know what? Now we can all be, we don't have to worry anymore because there's going to be a cure and we can fuck like bunnies now. And it's like, oh,
JK.
Jesus Christ, media. Come on, man. Ugh.
Yeah, it's like, let's fail to mention that not everyone who gets a bone marrow transplant actually survives and then go into the, like, very complicated like details that are involved with that actual specific scenario.
Yeah, like, you know, reproducing bone marrow is actually tough, and it's not something you can manufacture. And
that, well, and then finding people who actually have that, like, specific genetic, like, their immune system, you know, their CD4 cells are specifically resistant to HIV infection. I mean, that's rare enough, but then to have that person be a bone marrow donor, and then to have someone actually get the, you know, the donation, and then, like, have their body actually accept it. I mean, there's a lot of risk that was involved in that scenario, and some very specific circumstances that were very, very, very unique. So I think it is a great opportunity to learn a lot, but it is not the cure that people, I think, may have expected it to be, or have assumed it to be.
Or desperately want it to be.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Swing Set's got to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the acceptable risk of having a non-monogamous lifestyle, the acceptable risk we decide and what level that is, as well as preventative measures, protection measures, and all that jazz. So stick around and hear some messages from our sponsors.
Hello, listeners. You know, a lot of sex toys come across our desks here at Life on the Swing Set. Some of them are good, but many are forgettable. Then there are the products from Close to You. These toys are musically named because music is the language of passion. They rise to the top, superior instruments of pleasure that you can't wait to play with again and again. Close to You's entire line of toys are the cream of the crop. Their vibrators and anal beads are elegant, soft, and most wonderfully waterproof. Pick up Close to You's Harmonia G-Spot Vibe today at EdenFantasies.com.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called the Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is at smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality, non-toxic sex toys for people of all genders and sexual orientations. They have educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about smittenkittenonline.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. Can I use it too? They have this super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. SmittenKittenOnline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
Welcome back to Life on the Swing Set. I'm Cooper Beckett. We have Dylan, Shira, and Gay Rick from Sex is Fun here tonight. We are talking about STIs and risk assessment and all those fun topics that I know you just are desperately tuning in to listen to the rest of this show. But now I want to take us over to specifically what's most interesting, because it involves me, about this topic.
I fear the narcissist on the show.
Oh, well, isn't the narcissist usually the host on the show?
They usually are.
They're the ones who say, damn it, people want to listen to me, and I'm going to surround myself with other people so it's not just me.
I support that, and that's what I love.
But I mean, you know, I find it very interesting. And when you get into the swinging lifestyle, you have to look at that and say, okay, well, you know, my wife and I were monogamous for 11 years before we started swinging. And we had a very comfortable idea that we don't have any sexually transmitted diseases. And odds are, we're not going to get any. But as soon as we went to open up the marriage, it's like, well, now, really, all that's back on the table. And so it puts it into sharp relief, and it's something you definitely have to consider. And I think it's something that, while most swingers, I hesitate to say most, which is why I said moused. I'd say
those damn communist
most
swingers.
Of the swingers that that I have had the opportunity to know are pretty much well aware of the risks involved, talk about it, are fine with asking that question, even at dinner. So when was the last time you guys got tested, you know, and it was fine, and you always use condoms and blah, 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 and go on. But at the same time, you know that a good portion of the community also does not do that and is all about the anonymous sex at clubs where you don't have those discussions in the forefront. And so it's a strange thing, especially for a hypochondriac, to be getting into, because, you know, I had a conversation with a couple at Desire who were brand new, who had never swapped, had never even interacted beyond conversations with swingers. And they were asking, it's like, you know, at a place like this where you don't know these people and you're only going to see them for a week, really, how do you know that they're telling the truth when they say they're clean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, ultimately, you don't. You just don't. And you never will know the truth if someone is clean until you're positive you didn't get anything from them. And even then, they may not be clean.
Here's what I'm going to challenge even further, Cooper.
Okay.
Every STI has a window period.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it can take up to a certain amount of time for that STI to show in a screening test. With HIV, it's 3 months. With other STIs, it's a varying amount of time. However, during that window period, when you will not test positive for these things and you very well may have them, chances are that's when you're going to be the most infectious,
right?
Because your body hasn't developed antibodies to fight off these infections. So it's actually during those window periods that most people are probably, unless they never get sort of treatment and they're never screening, that's probably when they're the most infectious that they'll be.
Right.
So someone may have said, I was tested on this day and it came back negative. But if they've been having unprotected sex of any sort in, you know, since with HIV, like that test from yesterday is a snapshot of what their status was 3 months ago.
Right.
It's not a status of up to yesterday. So that's where it gets even more challenging, because you have to understand that their status from that test is not what it is right now. It's their status from a certain amount of time ago.
So Cooper, having all this knowledge and entering the big scary world of swinging as you've done, where did you fall on decisions of protecting yourself and your family?
And my family. well, we took pretty much the most standard swinger path, which is condoms for everything but oral. And we acknowledge that oral sex does have a transmission rate, but that it is much, much smaller than, you know, unprotected genital contact. So that is our level of acceptable risk.
Okay.
And we, 9 times out of 10, I'll say, have long conversations with these people beforehand. We get an idea for their promiscuity level, for the kind of people. You know, we do all these judgments based on, you know, are you fucking that scary guy over in the alley? Because he probably has something. You know, it's all this window dressing, essentially, that makes us feel safer than we perhaps are.
Okay, because, you know, that's the truth. Like, the people that you and I are fucking, those aren't the people that have something.
It's no, of course not.
It's obviously something else.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the places where I make a judgment call, in addition to a couple of the things that Cooper mentioned, is
You know, when he said the promiscuity rate, that was what kind of hit it on the head for me. Not necessarily the whole, you know, how many partners have you had, but it's where you find your partners. There are a couple of reasons why Tonya and I don't frequent, you know, anonymous sex clubs that much. One of the things being it's not really our social bag. I'm great in a crowd. Tonya isn't that great in a crowd. And so the kind of people that we might meet there, or, you know, the kind of relationships we might end up getting there would, you know, not work out too well just because of the inequality in how we do in crowds. But in addition to that, anonymous sex clubs are kind of anonymous. And so the anonymous dickwad theory on the internet, you know, when you're anonymous, you can be a dick and not have to worry about it because, well, you're anonymous. And in anonymous sex clubs where you're not exchanging information, there's a perceived lack of responsibility, at least from us. There are plenty of people that do it and that have done it with confidence. It's just where we're at right now, and we feel that way. And so we don't want to go to a sex club to pick somebody up. We'd go to socialize and go to meet people and maybe pick up prospects for later, once we're more comfortable in that social setting. But just going to a sex club and then going and having sex and then never meeting someone again, that isn't for us, because what happens after that if someone's infected? Well, you look at a worst-case scenario. If you're in a group of maybe five or six couples that you've met, and one person gets something, okay, well, if there's going to be a three-month layover between somebody catching something and someone giving something, you look at how it's going to spread. And, you know, that may spread out to the potential infections may spread out to, you know, five, six, seven, eight couples. Well, if you're going to an anonymous sex club every few days and, you know, having sex with lots of people, you don't know where that's stopping. And so in addition to it's stopping with the couples that you know really well, it's going to keep going through the anonymous people that you've been with and keep spreading potentially. And so we're not comfortable with that. We don't want to potentially get exposed to that and not know where it came from. If we ever got infected by somebody, we'd want to know where it came from, so we can help stop the spread of it with us and not go any further than that. You know, there's less lead time between somebody getting infected and us potentially getting infected if it's a more closed circle of people. At least that's how we feel about it. And that makes me feel better.
Okay. What I want to challenge, though, is that I don't think it's necessarily the people that are having anonymous sex that are the ones responsible for infecting other people. I want to emphasize that it's the people that are not using barriers that are the ones that are responsible. Mm-hmm. They're accepting a certain level of risk, and they may or may not become infected. They may or may not know that they're infected, and they may or may not be transmitting these infections to other people when they're aware of their status. So I wouldn't say it's just the people that are having anonymous sex that are the ones that are quote unquote responsible for transmitting these different infections. It's really about the behaviors. It's about having unprotected sex that's putting people at risk. It's about, it's about not using barriers, really. Because there are some really, and I've talked with these people and I work with these people and I've had like ongoing counseling relationships with these people who have anonymous sex, but they're really good about using barriers. Mm-hmm. So they're not the ones that are responsible.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. I should probably factor that more into, you know, the way I think about things.
That being said, though, I think there are other approaches to reducing risk. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is how can you reduce the risk if you're not going to use a barrier 100% of the time? And if you're going to have sex with multiple people and you're not going to use barriers, if you close off that group and everyone knows their status and it's kind of outside of all the window periods of those infections, that's a way to eliminate the risk of becoming infected with something else. So like, it's certainly safe to have group sex with a bunch of people who are not infected with anything, you know. that's the thing, that's the crazy thing about it. But you really need to make sure that everyone's being really honest and upfront about their status, and that they're not stepping outside of kind of the boundaries of that group and the agreement of safer sex.
I've been thinking about the way Cooper says a lot of swingers approach safer sex with this, with, you know, the barrier-free oral sex, and how that's an accepted level of risk for a lot of swingers. And I'm thinking that's, you know, the more I think about it, I think that's not just a swinger thing either. I feel like that also is a countrywide thing. I don't hear a lot of my monogamous or pseudo monogamous or single friends talking about all the barriered oral sex they're having out there when they're on, you know, hooking up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that strikes me as just a little bit different about the swinger community. It is that they're not that different than just everyday people.
Well, actually, there's been the limited studies that have been done in the swinger world, and you can take whatever actual facts out of this you want, because we all know that any study done in the swinger world is bound to be tremendously flawed, have shown that swingers are healthier in the fact that pretty much they all use condoms across the board. Not for oral, but for penetrative sex.
Right.
Whereas, you know, monogamous people in the dating world aren't, it would seem, as scared to just throw off the condom one time because, we didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas swingers come prepared to these events with pockets full of condoms. And every event I've ever been to has a box with condoms in every room.
Well, and that's the cool part about the swinger community, is because a lot of people in the community are so educated, you know, whether it be because they're, you know, hypochondriacs like you have identified yourself as, or because they understand the realistic risk of having multiple partners. And that's what's so cool about being a part of these communities, is that by being a part of the community, you understand the norms within that community. And the norm is we don't want to become infected with something. And I think that's a really great goal. You know, I really, really do. So the fact that you guys, that swingers or people that are in open relationships are communicating about these things, mm-hmm. is a huge thing. It's when those things become secrets, and when people are stepping outside of relationships, and when people are not being honest with their partners, and they're not saying, I did have unprotected sex with someone. That's when it becomes an issue.
When it makes you just desperately wish for a world where our statistics about these diseases and the transmissions had any sort of real accuracy whatsoever, because It'd be nice to know, you know, all these actual herpes, genital herpes cases, how many of them are, well, I'll say the stupid college kids who are just fucking around without protection, and how quickly it transmits via that group, and how those are skewing our numbers.
Well, here's the innate flaw with these reports that come out, is that they're self-reports.
Right.
And when I think of HIV, the number of people that don't want to admit that they maybe had sex with another man, that don't want to admit if they did have sex with another man, that it was anal sex, yeah. and that if they did have anal sex with another man, that they were the receptive partner.
Right.
These are the things that get really, really complicated with these reports, because it is self-report.
Yeah.
It's not based on, like, we had a camera and we saw when this person, how the actual behaviors of this person. So, I mean, it always just comes down to, is can you honestly communicate about these things? And that's what I enjoy so much about the swinger community, is that they can.
Yeah.
And that they will realistically take into account what the actual risk factors are for certain STIs. You know, some of them are from skin to skin. Some of them are from body fluids, and some of them are from blood to blood. You know, there's different risk factors, and everyone has their own level of risk that they're willing to engage in. And I'm actually really not afraid to say that I've probably engaged in some things that people would actually be terrified of doing. But other people, that would be a drop in the bucket for them. Right. So it's a tricky, complicated thing, and it really comes down to the individual and their self-evaluation of the level of risk that they're willing to engage in. But then the other thing I want to challenge is learning about these infections and how these things are actually transmitted, will that change with time? Because it can, and it inevitably will, because at some point you very well might meet someone who is HIV positive. You might meet someone with herpes. You might meet someone with whatever.
Right.
Are you willing to engage in a barrier-free encounter with them? And some people are, and some people aren't.
I'll just speak as the hypochondriac. No, I'm not.
Well, then you have to watch Queer as Folk, and then you could see, what is it, Hal Sparks and his partner Ben. It's really cute. You gotta go for it. He's an HIV-positive guy with his non-positive, very cute relationship. You're closing yourself off to good things.
I'm closing myself off to Hal Sparks? Is that what I'm closing myself off?
Hal Sparks is Hal so Sparks, dreamy.
Yum. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear. That's who I was closing myself off to. Okay.
I've actually been told that I look like Hal Sparks a couple of times.
Ooh. No way. Hal Sparks, I went to see Hal Sparks. I know this is a total tangent now. I went to see Hal Sparks live once, and he signed his DVD for me. He said, "To my polyamorous friend, love Hal Sparks." He was very sweet.
Did you speak out with him? Because I wish you had.
I totally wish I had as well. He had the long hair then too. It was a good time.
I gotta admit, I feel kind of dumb right now. And
just because you haven't watched Queer as Folk?
No. I feel like I've missed out on something cool because I haven't watched Queer as Folk. I feel dumb because I'm still a relatively new swinger, but I had formed my kind of risk assessment and my opinion on the whole thing based on maybe the first couple months of it, because that's when Tony and I talked about it a ton. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've given it a second. I mean, I've had fairly good rules about the whole thing and fairly good thoughts of, you know, what kind of risks I wouldn't take. But the whole, my network idea that I was mentioning before, I may have formed that in the second month of swinging. Mm-hmm. And so when I was saying it to you, I started thinking to myself, wait a second, I haven't thought about this in a while, but you know what I'm saying, I'm going to keep going with it. And then after what you and everybody else has said, it's like, oh man, I really haven't discussed this, or I haven't thought about this in so long, and I feel really dumb.
You shouldn't feel dumb. You absolutely should not feel dumb. I think it's, for so many people, it's black or white. I either have protected sex all the time, or I don't. You know, I do want to put myself at risk, or I don't. But the thing is, we're human beings. And there's going to be exceptions to moments when we feel that the risk might be worth it. And the hilarious part is that it's not going to be based on factual information. It's going to be based oftentimes on the person that we're with.
Mm-hmm.
I have a number of friends who have some type of sexually transmitted infection, and they have partners that have different STI or HIV statuses from them. And there are moments in their relationship that are challenged because one person is willing to engage in more risk than the other. And that's the thing, is that you just need to be willing to talk about it and explore it. Because you're going to be surprised with when you might be comfortable with these things.
This is something that comes up a lot in polyamorous relationships because, unlike swingers, we're not always at the same level of risk at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because swingers and, you know, single people, monogamous people, they're always kind of they're in it for themselves. And, whether themselves happens to be the couple, the two people who are swinging, or, yeah. Themselves by alone. But for example, when I'm out on a date and I'm making a safe sex decision, my partner is not there with me to make it as well.
Absolutely.
So, polyamorous people, I think, kind of fall into a couple of different scenarios that you don't see as often, but I'm going to kind of go over for, I still am not confirmed that we have polyamorous listeners on the show.
We have lots of polyamorous listeners, actually.
Okay, good.
Well, and I think there's a fine line between poly and swinger. I think the fact that you're bringing it up is incredibly important.
A blurry fine line.
It is a very blurry fine
line. So where I'm going with this is polyamorous people, because they're not always with their partners when they're out having dates or having sex with other people, though sometimes they can be, depends on their dynamic. A lot of times they have to be a little bit extra aware because whatever they're doing is not including their partner's decision at the time. So that being the case in my relationship, we are very, very careful when it comes to safe sex, with pretty rare occasion. I mean, things happen. That's the way it goes. But for 98% of the time, we're pretty much on top of things.
Thank you for admitting that, because that's the most important. But that's the most important thing, is to admit, like, out loud sometimes, like, we're not 100% of the time. We're not going to pretend that we are. And that's okay.
We deal with it when it comes up, right? We go through the whole process of testing and, making sure and, reassessing where we are. But, 98% of the time, I personally am very, very careful. I do use barriers. And Cooper gave me a little shout out on his desire report. He said Shira uses oral barriers.
I do.
I'm
proud of you.
I do that, but I do find that when dating kind of advances to a certain point, there's a couple of options that I find will come up in a polyamorous relationship. Once you've been dating someone for a while, it's not uncommon for polyamorous people to decide that they want to fluid blonde. Yes.
Have you been having the wine that I've been drinking too?
No, I just, can't talk.
Yeah.
So polyamorous couples or triads or however they might decide to be, they will look into fluid bonding with new couple, yep, or new people. And this is somewhat complex, like every fucking thing that polyamorous people do, but it's totally out there and a possibility. In fact, I did this with a partner that I had late last year. We had been dating for a while and we thought about dropping barriers. So we tested and we went through the whole process of everyone talking about how we're going to close off, and should anyone introduce any new partners, then we're going to go back to barriers. And, we went through the whole ordeal of, yes, let's get to this point where we can actually not use oral barriers and go through and maybe bring things a little bit closer. And yeah, I think that's kind of a perk of being polyamorous, is, you can develop a relationship to the point where maybe you don't need all that stuff. And the trust is really there, just like in a normal monogamous relationship.
Normal. You used the word normal.
Oh, it's normal. Come on. It's totally normal. Look at that.
Wow. I'm just saying. I'm just pointing it out.
I know. I'm not being inclusive. I apologize.
No, but I am very proud of you that you have that conviction to stand with that. That's impressive.
It's not fun. There's nothing cool, guys. There's nothing cool about a condom in your mouth. It's like nothing.
If it was fun, I wouldn't be as proud of you.
But you know what it is? Having a dick in your mouth is so much more important than having that condom in your mouth. That's totally worth it. It's enjoyable.
Okay. I respect that. And here is my challenge to everyone who feels this way about condoms with oral sex, is that it can be good. You just need to think about it differently. Why is it good? I actually have had some amazing oral sex with a condom. And it's just about challenging kind of some of those beliefs.
Oh my God. It's totally the way you work it, Rick.
It is. But I understand. I know how I feel about condoms. Like if I were to need to start using condoms with my boyfriend right now, that would be kind of shocking and not exciting. But with other people, it is just as sexy to use them with them as it is to not use them with my long-term boyfriend.
Right. No, I agree there. I think if I had to use barriers, oral barriers with my primary partner, I'd be a very, very sad panda.
Super sad panda.
You know, I'm actually kind of surprised that no company has come up with a condom that once you apply it, you take a heat gun to it for a couple seconds. And then
a shrink wrap?
That makes it so much worse. No, it's all about lubrication. No, it is. It's all about lubrication on the inside of the condom. So you could kind of manipulate the condom around the, you don't want it like stuck to your dick. You want it moving around on the skin. So it's,
but what if you're already uncut though? Cause then you have both the skin layer that's already a sheath that you're moving around, and then you have the condom layer, which is another sheath that you're moving around.
Put a lot of lube in it. But my other question for you is, have you tried polyisoprene condoms yet?
I haven't. Are they?
Have any of you tried them yet?
Polyisoprene, is that what you said?
Yes, it's different from polyurethane.
Huh.
They changed my life.
Really?
What did they do?
They feel glorious. It's like polyurethane, except it's thinner. It has that advantage that polyurethane has over latex in that it transfers body heat a little bit better. And for people they're safe for people with latex allergies. Give them a try. I've recommended these to a number of people and they have said these have changed my life. I am just saying, I will not say that this is going to be consistent for 100% of the people, but I will say that they have changed my life.
Sure, that's your homework.
Yeah, I will have to do that. And my other homework would be to find someone that, yes, polyisoprene, I'm all over it.
All right, so
that will wear a condom while that's going on. That's the other thing, because let's be realistic. How many people want to actually use condoms with oral sex? Not a lot. And based on clients that I've been talking with, and based on just about every damn person I know, they're like, well, I'm willing to deal with the risks with oral sex. And that's okay. That's good that you recognize that there are risks to it and you're willing to be okay with those risks. Kudos for at least thinking about it. I just challenge to people to think about it.
Yeah, it's tough. I haven't had anyone turn away a blowjob, but I doubt that.
Nor have I. So.
I think it's more like about the way you approach it. If you make it fun, like, hey, I'm going to show you that this can be as fun, and I'm going to go out of my way to make this a really enjoyable experience, and look at how good I am at this, and I bet you can't even tell, then it becomes kind of a game and kind of fun.
Well, no.
And I think the other thing to think about is putting the condom on with your mouth. That makes a world of difference than putting it on with your hand. And kind of when you put it on with your mouth, it's an interruption to the sex act. When you put it on with your hand, I should say. When you're putting it on with your mouth, it's a continuation of the sex act.
Can you teach me how to do that, Rick? I don't know.
Actually, surprisingly, not that hard, but I could, yes.
do you generally stick the condom between your gums and your teeth? And so you can kind of hold it there and then
I'll kind of hold, like, so the outside of the condom will be outside of my lips, but you can put it inside your mouth. The thing to remember is that you need to squeeze that reservoir tip, but you can't squeeze that reservoir tip with your teeth. So you have to use some tongue muscle to hold that reservoir tip down as you're rolling it down with your lips. So how do you do that? It's actually not as hard as you think. And the thing to do is to practice.
How do you do it with lube? Like, how do you get lube on the inside of that if it's in your mouth.
Oh my god! Have you watched Kidder's "How to Make Condoms Suck Less" video on YouTube?
I don't think I have.
No.
Oh god, you need to watch that. Okay, you need to look at that. It's okay. Beautiful. But put a substantial amount of lube in the condom before you even put it on the dick. Don't put the lube on. I mean, you can lube up the penis.
Even if it's in your mouth, dude.
Well, you put the lube in the condom before.
These are concessions you have to make.
Okay.
It actually works out really, really well. It's I know it sounds complicated, but with a little bit of practice, you're going to be surprised at how not complex it is.
YouTube Kidder, I'm all over it.
It's actually on the Trojan Brand Condoms site. We'll make sure we get that in the the site notes. Yeah, I'll link it to you here, but. We'll get it in the side notes later.
Well, one thing I do want to talk about, though, is we've done a lot of discussing of condom use and blowjobs, but there is this sort of other oral sex thing, with girls.
Oh God, yes. I forgot about the vagina again.
Yeah,
what? Damn it!
Completely skipped over oral barriers.
I was being inclusive.
See, this is what happens when you bring a gay guy on the show. You forget all about the vagina.
I'm all about the cock. I'm all
focusing
about
the penis right now.
Well, and you know, I, as someone who doesn't use oral barriers, who understands the benefit of them, but at the same time realizes that unlike with a condom where you still have pretty much everything is still there, when you throw an oral barrier over the pussy, you are just licking a plastic bag.
But you're performing a feat.
Yes, but I love eating pussy because I love eating pussy. Because I love the taste of it. I love feeling my tongue inside. I love everything about that.
You've basically described Lords of Acid in everything.
I think I know that song. But that's the benefit of – that's kind of one of – the nice things about being in a fluid bonded relationship is that you can then do that. And it's also something to keep in mind as you may be having protected oral sex with other women. Are you willing to face that risk to get something that's important to you? And it sounds like you are.
Well, at least I have been.
You have. I don't want to scare anyone because I respect that decision. And the reason I respect that decision is because you've thought about it.
I don't want to make it sound like it's entirely unfun to go through oral sex with a barrier. Like a lot of time for me, when I'm performing anyways, like Cooper, you're right. It is licking a piece of plastic, but like you get some sensation. There's some texture there. And if you make it a game of like for yourself, you can find some enjoyability.
But you know, exactly what you just said sounds a lot like what my mother used to say about eating my vegetables. You know, you may maybe just make it a game, enjoy it a little bit more. And I never fucking enjoyed it.
You know, I wonder if the shrink wrap meme would actually work for this a little bit better.
See, what we really need.
You get like the barrier and you slip it on like a pair of panties. And then you get the heat gun out and you kind of heat gun it all around.
No. You can put away your heat gun. No more heat gun.
So essentially,
but I like the idea.
Dylan, fully form-fitting female condom that comes with a pair of panties around it.
See, this is we actually at my job, we actually created this contraption that we wanted to that I said we need to market this and we need to trademark this because patent. Thank you. Patent. We need to patent this. It was like rubber bands on the sides of a dental dam. And then you could slide it up around your legs. And I put it on and it stayed on. And I was like, dude, this works. it's just like poking holes through it and then having rubber bands like that just wrapped around the legs. It was beautiful. It sounds confusing, but it did surprisingly well.
And in Desire, my wife was the recipient of oral with a barrier.
Okay.
And she did say it feels almost the same. So for the recipient, it sounds like it's pretty much similar.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I could deal with
it's
that.
It's for the giver is very yeah. different.
That yes.
Way. Although I have to admit, it would be a lot of fun watching Marilyn receive with
oh, you just like watching that anyway.
Well, I do, but it, because she squirts so much. Yeah. what you could do is you could actually form channels.
Yeah, that's actually, no, actually,
you
that's,
could have it like squirt up the top or squirt out the
that's
sides.
That's a big thing, though, is the with the volume of the eruption. Really, that's knocking back any sort of barrier. You're going to get coated with fluids no matter what if you're anywhere near her.
But it's not necessarily in the mouth. It's not in those areas that may be more susceptible yeah, to
it's very infection true.
Is a thing. Because the skin is actually a really efficient barrier to infections, especially if it's in fluids that can transmit like STIs and things like that. Like you're not going to get HIV if semen or vaginal fluid gets on your skin. It's going to be when it's inside of the tip of the penis. It's inside of the anus. It's inside of the vagina. You know, that's when there's actual risk involved with certain STIs, you know? So her squirting and getting it all over someone's chest, that's not a big deal.
Right.
No, it's a big deal.
Well, I mean, it is a big deal.
Maybe you just haven't experienced it. You
know? I kind of want to see this now, actually.
Well, the first time.
Next time we're in Minnesota, I'll let you know and we'll give you a private show.
It'll be a private show. Okay.
It's the unexpected injecting into the sinuses. That's really the amazing.
That would be a risk.
Well, it's a risk of more than just, you know, transmission. It's a risk of drowning. I almost. Yes. She filled both my mouth and my nose and my eyes.
Like a neti pot.
Well, you know, we were playing a game at my place the other day, and Cooper decided to give a little bit of
warning. Playing the heat party game, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if that was OPSEC or not. So yes, we were beta testing the game, and it's a great game. I definitely want to break it out for a few more parties, both vanilla and non-vanilla. But yeah, the oral sex then was pretty amusing. There was some choking going on with Cooper there, so.
I had to walk away because it was stinging the eyes.
Wait, it's fun stings? To watch.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I've described her taste as a hint of cinnamon. And if you've ever put a hint of cinnamon in your eyes, you know it stings.
Just I don't want to put a hint. This is intense, guys.
Yeah. So I'm sure just have your
send it over to you if you'd like.
Have a playmate take some cinnamon, put it in the hand.
No.
So sexually transmitted infections, Rick, huh?
Yes.
Just a hint.
So barriers with the lady parts. Yeah. It always, like I said, comes down to the level of risk that you're willing to engage in.
Right.
You know, putting your tongue on a vulva, is there some risk there? Yes. Is it for things that may kind of impact your life long term? Potentially. Is there a risk kind of – is it a high risk situation? Not necessarily. So just be realistic. I think it comes down to, yes, that thing that you're saying, Cooper, is like, this is what my mom told me to do with my vegetables is to make it a game. But it is. And it's surprising how changing your mindset can change your decisions around that stuff. But the only way you're going to know is if you try it. And that's what I always challenge people, because the idea of having sex, oral sex with a condom was stupid to me until I actually had good oral sex with a condom. So that therein lies kind of the challenge.
Hey, I appreciate you mentioning it. I'm actually going to look into the polyisoprene, I think you said. Yeah, the polyisoprene condoms and give it a try just to see. And I appreciate the conversation we're having.
Well, and I think
this is helping
one
me.
More thing about oral barriers with women is to put lube on the side of the barrier that's going to be in contact with your genitals.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a big difference as well. So just so people are aware of that. It sounds like you guys may be aware of that, but I just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of that, because that the more pleasure people can get while they're using barriers, the happier I am.
and really, just with any sort of barrier, it's a good idea to get a good deal of lube in there.
Lots and lots of lube, lots of it.
And I'm a big advocate of silicone lube because it lasts forever, but I know that it's different for every person and situation. So figure out what works best for you. And the only way to do that is to try. And by trying, that means you're getting laid. So, right. So in addition to kind of like the lube thing that we were just talking about, I do want to kind of bring up some other things around risk reduction. Because I understand that everyone has different life circumstances that impact sex for them. And sometimes that may involve, psychological barriers. Sometimes that may involve substance use. That it may involve a lot of different things. So just keep in mind, if you are using substances, a really good thing to do is stay hydrated. Because when you're using a lot of different substances, your body does become dehydrated. Whether that be kind of from the substance itself or from the effects of the substance. So if you're just staying hydrated and keeping a lot of water in your body, that's going to kind of keep everything wet and not dry out and more likely to tear. So that helps a lot. And psychological barriers, I think a lot of things come down to relaxing and challenging kind of some of those ideas of what you're ready for and what you're not ready for and evaluating those things. Because if you're nervous about the kind of sex that you're having, or you're nervous about having sex without a barrier, your body's going to clench up and tense. And when those muscles are tense, that's going to make everything else tense as well. And kind of increase the risk for tearing or ripping. So really be conscious of what's going on and do what you can and recognize what your body's telling you. If you're not comfortable, don't go to that level. Hold back and reevaluate and talk about it if you need to, or do something else that will relax you a bit more so you're prepared for that step when you're there. Because if there's ripping or tearing, that's when the risk is going to increase if you're not using a barrier.
All good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Was that too Debbie Downer? I hope I wasn't Debbie Downer about all this. Because I love it.
This is life on the swing set at its most utilitarian, I suppose.
Well, and this is very standard. Is Shira's the positive, upbeat, safe girl. Dylan's the guy who learns something. I'm the one who steadfastly is sticking to my existing
thing. And then
one teaching us. So, it's great.
Well, yeah. And that's the cool part is that you guys have that spectrum, because everyone's at a different point in their life and everyone's evaluated where they are in their individual situations. And that's what it always comes down to is, I can beg and plead and push for everyone to use condoms 100% all the time, but I get that that's not realistic. That's absolutely not realistic, because it's so based on who you are and where you are in life. So just think about it and don't discount something if you haven't tried it yet.
Right.
And don't discount something if you haven't tried it yet with your current partner. It can be a scary topic, but realistically, it's just a part of things. And I go back to that flu analogy that I made earlier. It's like, don't make a bigger deal of this than it is. It's something that happens, and it happens to over half of all sexually active adults, and it's okay. And life is going to go on. It's just about monitoring your health. And the cool part is that if you are actually getting tested, you are monitoring your health. And that's, I think, super mega awesome sauce.
Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap it up here. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at SwingSetLife. You can contact us and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. Give us an email, contact@lifeontheswingset.com. Or give us a call, and these numbers are not answered despite Dylan desperately wanting to answer in the middle of the night while nude. These numbers are
fine. I kind of want to hear from Dylan while he's nude, actually.
And, I have a little bit of a challenge. If anybody knows, I was just thinking, the whole heat gun thing.
In the middle of my wrap-up, you have a challenge.
He hasn't given you a hard enough time yet today.
That's right, I haven't.
My God.
Here's the thing. I like the idea of the GIMP and the latex suit. Actually, I like the latex suit part of it, or the rubber suit or whatever. And I know that you kind of have to find something that's really form-fitting. Well, I was thinking, what if somebody had already made a bodysuit that was just, you know, generic stretchy plastic or something, and then you took a heat gun to that, and then all of a sudden it would conform.
Oh my god!
You need to stop this heat gun thing.
I had to have thought of it, so send me sidebar.
I think we got some new fetish. Is that what's going on here?
Clearly, there's a heat gun fetish thing going on.
Okay.
Sidebar, complete sidebar. Guys that are really into rubber and latex really are into me, and I have no idea why.
Really?
They all love to tell me how good I would look in rubber or latex, and I'm like, I don't.
Something to do with looking like Hal Sparks. I'm gonna have to contact Hal, get him in rubber and latex, and then envision
this. If you're ever in Chicago or in the area, I'll invite you over to one of our parties, and we'll just introduce you guys to Hal Sparks and see what people say.
I'm gonna be down there this summer, so I will be in touch with you. Actually,
we will take you out to dinner and show you a good time.
Whee! Our heat guns will be standing by,
and he will not use the heat gun on you. I promise.
You guys make me so jealous out there.
I will be back out in San Francisco, and I will tell you what, I'm desperate to go out to Folsom again. So you
are
will,
you coming to Folsom this year? You should definitely.
But I will see what I can finagle with my schedule. But
okay.
I want to go to Folsom again because that was an amazing time.
When's the last time you went?
Okay, I have to say this is the weirdest outro we've ever recorded.
Wrap it up. Okay.
I'm sorry.
So you need to go eat dinner anyway.
No. Yes. Wait. Yeah, wrap it up, guys.
Oh my god.
Best show ever.
He has a gay dinner party to get back to.
That's right.
No.
Right, I'm shutting up now, I swear.
Okay. So give us a call at 573-55-SWING and maybe ask us why we never can get through an outro without long sidetracking. And that's actually the end of the outro. See, if you just let me finish, we could have gone off and had a I was going to say a gay old time, but I thought that might not be appropriate.
Yeah, you can say gay old time.
Gay old time.
I'm actually surprisingly not offended by a lot of things. So.
Well, thank you, Gay Rick, for joining us. Really, it was a pleasure to have you on here.
And thank you for including me. You guys are pretty awesome, and I've really felt like a cool part of this team. So thank you.
You were definitely a cool part of the team. So thank you, Dylan and Shira, as always, and thank you all for swinging by. Do you enjoy Life on the Swing Set? Well, hey, why don't you come on over to iTunes and write us a little review? It doesn't have to be long. It makes all the difference in getting us seen by more people. And by seen, I mean heard, because we're a podcast. So if you come on over and give us a good review, we'll be very, very happy you did. And when we get happy, we tend to get naughty. So rate Life on the Swing Set today.